to you and peace from God who creates and redeems and sustains all things. Amen. Over the course of the summer, you'll find me preaching a lot on the Old Testament. We're doing the what's called the semi-continuous lectionary, which is draws lessons out of the Old Testament in a semi-continuous fashion. So this reading in Genesis 21 follows not long after our reading that we had last week. And as I was telling the kids in this story, the child Isaac is born and he begins to grow up and he was weaned and they had a great feast day. And you remember the text from last week was that at the oaks of Mamre, which was actually a terebinth tree, Abraham welcomes three guests and they tell Abraham and Sarah that they will be the parents of a great nation. And Abraham's 100 years old and Sarah is not long past that. And Sarah laughs. Well, Sarah isn't laughing anymore. Sarah is not laughing anymore because the child, Isaac, her son, is growing up. And he's now going to be the heir of the kingdom. And she looks out and she sees Isaac playing with the son of Hagar, Abraham's slave, through whom he had created and birthed his first heir. Suddenly, this Sarah character, who has been imbued with all of this wonderful poetic sense of laughter and joy of nations, changes her skin. She looks out and she sees the two boys playing and she says to Abraham, "Get that slave and her son out of here." I put in my notes that apparently Abraham had not participated in the birth of that son. I'm not sure how that worked out, because for Sarah it is that slave and her son. She doesn't want any competition. She doesn't want to share in the inheritance of Abraham, only her son Isaac, as makes sense from the days of this kind of inheritance. Only he must inherit. So we sometimes gloss over this text, and I don't want to gloss over it today. If you read the text, it says that Abraham gave her a skin of water and a little bit of food. And he sent them out into the wilderness. He gives them just enough water and just enough food to get them far enough away that they will die out of earshot. Not enough to get them to the next village. He doesn't, and could have certainly, put together a small caravan and taken them to the next village. He could have gotten some men and women together to accompany them out. He could have provisioned them and sent them out into the next town and gotten them out of the way. But that is not what Sarah wants. And so they do just that. And Hagar and her baby are sent out into the wilderness to die. So when people tell me that they are interested, they talk about how the world is going to hell in a handbasket and how horrible family values are and how we need to get back to a biblical sense of family, I think about this story, about the incredible cruelty and injustice and unfairness of this story. And it doesn't get any better. Hagar herself is just so ridden with guilt and shame and desperation and sadness that she even takes her son, who is unnamed in this story, and she puts him under a bush and goes away far enough that, like Abraham, she will not hear him die. It's a horrible story. It's a horrible story. The only time that the son, that the boy's name is mentioned is obliquely in verse 17. When it says, and God heard the voice of the boy. Because that's Ishmael's name. It means God heard. God heard the voice of the boy. And the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, what troubles you, Hagar? Do not be afraid. God has heard the voice of the boy. As you know, the story ends well. God hears the voice of the boy and hears the voice of Hagar. And even earlier, if you remember, God says to Abraham, don't worry, I know you're going to do this thing, but don't worry because I'm going to make a nation of your first son also. Not only of Isaac, but of Ishmael. And I can imagine Hagar saying to herself, had she heard this, yeah, right, that's going to work out well because we're on our way out to die. But God indeed hears. And unlooked for and unexpected, God redeems both Hagar and Ishmael. And Ishmael, in fact, does become the father of a nation. All of this is a way to remind us that our relationship with God and our faith is not always an easy thing. In one moment, Sarah laughs, and in the next, she seeks the death of a child. One moment, Abraham is trying to entertain angels unaware and finds out that he's going to be a father of nations, and just a little while later, he will place his own beloved son on a bier of wood and prepare to take his life. There is nothing easy about faith. And lest we be tempted to say, well, yeah, that was the Old Testament. It's different now. And now with Jesus, it's all good and sweet and nice. You have to read the gospel lesson. I did not come to bring peace, but I came to bring a sword to set mother against daughter and daughter-in-law against mother-in-law, which is fairly typical, and son against father, and everybody's going to be in a mess. And yet, God hears. That's maybe the part of the story that we don't really kind of get. That for all that happens to Hagar and Abraham and Sarah, it is all about God's hearing and God's presence. That even in the midst of the greatest strifes of our faith and our lives, God remains with us. Our own church began just that way. This day, June 25th in 1530, Philip Melanchthon delivered the Augsburg Confession to Emperor Charles of the Holy Roman Empire. Now, can you imagine being Philip Melanchthon and thinking to yourself, how convenient is it that Luther's tucked away in a castle somewhere and I'm delivering the bad news? He hands over the core of what they have come to believe in, this thing that will in fact blow up the world. Faith was so important to them that they were willing literally to endure the sword. There was no metaphorical sword, as some people have interpreted this gospel text, that it, you know, came to not to bring peace, but a sword, that it's some kind of metaphorical sword. But for Luther and for Melanchthon and for those reformers who were there that day, it became a real sword. It was one that would light the world on fire, and children would die. Peasants would die. Priests would be killed. Churches would be burned to the ground. art destroyed. Faith was that important, but not easy. What Luther and the Reformers, and I think us today, need to remember and always should remember is that even in the midst of those times of sword and difficulty and division, which certainly we are facing these days, that in the midst of all of that, God's promises ring true. That God is always forming us into a new people to bring good news to the poor, to heal those who are sick. God looks at Hagar and says, look, here is water. Look, here is food. And God says to us and this world of strife, look, here is the water of life and the food that brings peace. God does not promise smooth sailing. God does not promise that your life will be easy or that all of your sufferings and difficulties will go away, that pain will end and sickness will no longer be a part of your life. God does not promise those things, but God certainly does promise Abraham and Sarah and Hagar and Ishmael, do not be afraid, I will be with you. It will not be smooth sailing, but God's persistent presence will remain. It will not be easy, but God's persistent promise is always true. I've always thought it ironic that 30 years later, after Melanchthon delivered Augsburg Fortress, our publishing house. See how you get 30 years, literally exactly 30 years later, after Melanchthon delivered the Augsburg Confession on June 25th, 1530, he died. June 25th, 1560. And in those 30 years, he saw his world torn apart and begin to rebuild. Sword and difficulty and very little peace. But he died knowing this, that God was in our midst and would continue to live out God's promise for us. And so it is true in these days of discord and difficulty that God is still with us, bringing us our laughter and our promise that we will be God's people. Amen.